Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Someone's always left behind. With the times, things seem better where they are. They seem more real here. What's left is the last wedge. You've drank the cup dry. Now you think you're the last human being in the world. The last human being in the world. In the world,
we grow like trees and be branch out. Grow what the body needs to bring us out. Closing in this new idea.
What would you do if you were the last human on Earth? Would you switch off the lights? Would you effectively say, that's it, it's time to actually pack up and go away? How would we cope with that? Well, clearly...
You know what? I think I'd probably have a lot of apologising to do, even if I was the last one here. I'd probably leave written apologies to the world and certainly to a lot of loved ones. It would be with a great deal of regret, Alex, because for all its imperfections, it's been a fun place to live.
Exactly. The voice there of Richard Strange. Yes, the Richard Strange. He's back with us, and we've just been listening to the awesome Last Human on the Earth. This is New York Real Talk. Hopefully Pam will join us fairly shortly. I mean, after all, she has been on tour with Richard Strange. She knows the ways of which they work, and indeed... focuses on a whole range of other bits and pieces. But until Pam arrives, we'll continue regardless, because this is some awesome material you've been producing from your latest album, Richard, which, of course, was released very recently in terms of the whole sequence. So would you like to talk us through what we've just been listening to and how effectively your magic still echoes well into the 21st century?
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you. Yeah, this has got an interesting history, the double CD, A Different World. Back in 1978, my band Doctors of Madness were just about to hit the buffers. And so were the band of a really good friend of mine, T.B. Smith, who had a band called The Adverts. They were rather more successful than us, and yet I still forgave him. Tim and I became really good friends. They started off, the Adverts, and Tim in particular, started off as fans who would come to any gig that we did west of Swindon or Reading or somewhere, because they lived down in the West Country, and very few bands used to go down there, partly because it was a bit of a wasteland culturally, and also partly because it was a long way to travel, which put strains on all the meagre income that we would be getting from doing the gig in the first place. Anyway, that notwithstanding, Tim and I became really firm friends, and I was delighted when he formed a band and I became their number one fan. I used to go and see them whenever I could. And even back then, in those very, very early days, I thought, this guy is a very special songwriter. Leave aside his incandescent performances when delivering those songs to an audience, the quality of his lyricism, his ear for a melody, and his politics, I suppose, all chimed with what I love most about music. He didn't write about music like so many do, or write about the music world. He wrote about the world, full stop.
He was looking through Gary Gilmore's eyes, obviously.
There you go. Yeah. I think probably the only song he ever wrote about music was One Chord Wonders. But, you know, that was very firmly tongue-in-cheek. And I think probably the first chord, the first record they ever released. So anyway, at careers hitting the buffers, 1978, we got together and we just started writing songs in my flat using a two-track Revox tape recorder that had that very special sound-on-sound feature. So you could build up endless amounts of hiss and tape noise while adding a tambourine or a guitar part. Anyway, we wrote probably 8 or 10 songs. in a very short period of time, recorded them all. And Tim was going off and doing his new thing, which was TV Smith's Explorers. I was going off and doing my solo project, The Phenomenal Rise. And we were both touring at different times in different places. We never lost touch with each other, but those songs sort of got put onto a shelf on those, back then it was quarter-inch tape, Ampex tape.
Ah, you're so analog, Richard, honestly.
It was all analog back then, you see. And this, in a way, is the joy of this. Because about 2 years ago, we were chatting about getting them released in some way, and something called International Record Store Day came along.
Vinyl has returned. It never went away, yeah. But it's now back with a vengeance.
Yeah, it's back. And so that seemed like a good peg to hang it on, to hang an analog record on a vinyl release. And we called it 1978. And hold on, let me see if I can find one for you.
1978, of course, famous for the fact when Scotland went to Argentina, Ali McLeod and Ali's Tartan Army were very much to the fore there. And indeed, a whole heap of other goodies, including, of course, I Don't Like Mondays. The Boomtown Rats had a number one hit with the 1978 era. Other than that, I think I was probably taking my... I'd started my A-levels in chemistry and biology at that stage.
There you are, you see. Well, I'm glad they weren't wasted. So that's 2 years ago. We released that on a limited edition vinyl. And it went very, very well. It went... We sold out on Record Store Day with sales all around the world with that. And that was very satisfying. Then about a year later, middle of last year, we're having a conversation. I said, I'm really glad how those songs went, Tim, but I don't really want that to be the end of it. And I've been thinking, when we made those songs, it was a completely different world. It was, as you say, an analog world. It was a world before Starbucks, before McDonald's, certainly in this country. It was a world before mobile telephones, social media, fake news, Trump, Brexit.
McDonald's was still around, but I think he was actually sort of in his early days back in
the 70s. He might have been around, but he never came to see my band, thank God. We're chatting, and I said, Tim, it was just a different world. He said, that's the title. I said, well, the title of what? He said, we've got to revisit these songs. And I thought, this is a brilliant idea. So I asked Tim to send me to re-record a vocal and a guitar part, send them to me as we can now as an email attachment for these 10 songs, and we wrote two new ones. And I said, I will do the production, the arrangements in a digital world, using samplers, using Logic, using, all the technology that's now available to a 15-year-old in his bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I started to reimagine these songs in a 21st post-digital world, in a world that is in constant technological flux, is in a period of huge change, but in also
Richard, whatever ChatGPT wishes to provide for us, that clearly is where we will actually go. In fact, I just want to confirm a little notion that neither Richard nor myself, as far as I'm aware, have been replaced by ChatGPTs as yet.
There you go. But well, you know, I work in education. Sometimes. And it almost went without saying 6 months ago that if a student submitted a piece of work which had been either done partially or wholly with the help of a chatbot,
they would be failed.
They would be failed. Yeah.
Now we embrace the technology.
Now you've got to embrace the technology. What we know is that it won't go back in that toothpaste tube. The genie won't go back in the bottle. Just like, I suppose in your generation, my generation, if we didn't know the capital of Nigeria, we would look it up in a an encyclopedia or something similar. If we couldn't do long multiplication and we were lucky enough to have a calculator, we'd use that. So suddenly this idea of AI being unfair, it all looks a bit like a bit Luddite to have a an objection to it on ethical grounds. Mm-hmm. So I think what's got to have to be done in education or in academia is that if AI chatbots are allowed to help you with your work, every piece of work has got to be vibrant. Every student who submits a piece of work has at least got to be able to chat with us for a quarter of an hour and let us know that he understands or she understands their own submission and the implications of it. You know, you can leave the clunky stylizations of the language to one side. You don't necessarily need a chatbot to give you clunky prose. Humans do it very, very well, in my experience. But the idea that these things can be utilized, as they will in industry and in the real world going forward, why would you insist almost on a handwritten 3,000-word dissertation on a totally obscure subject that no one will ever reference again in their lifetime?
Having said that, you know, 3,000 words, it's. I mean, you're looking for 10,000 word minimum for undergraduate dissertation. Surely 3,000 words is just a slightly long essay, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, I do that on the back of a fag packet.
Exactly, exactly. Now, let's progress. I suspect we may not call this episode 65 of New York Real Talk, given that obviously one of the co-hosts of New York Real Talk, Pamela Suman, seems to be not quite entering the building. We don't know. Things can actually happen. Hopefully all's well. But let's continue, because looking back over our records, we see that actually you made your debut on Siren Radio with the Madrid Drive Live, at least, for Thursday, August the 8th, 2019, when you were actually taking part in that.
4 years ago.
Exactly. And we haven't looked back since. Since then, of course, you then went on to be part of National Superhero Week and World Vet Day, even unwittingly. You were featured on the same program. And, of course, you were... and this is a record nobody can ever take away from you, together with our BAFTA award-winning director, Graham Harper, and, of course, Pamela Suman, the first ever contributors to New York Real Talk Episode Zero. You were actually at Ground Zero, the epicenter of New York Real Talk.
There's something to go on the tombstone.
Precisely, which is why I would have thought, you know, the phenomenal Rise of Richard Strange, which was performed in its entirety back in 2018, probably needs to actually look towards that. So let's progress ever onwards with a question I've been meaning to ask you for quite some time, Richard. And I think it hasn't been vexing me, but it's been one of those things which I just thought, I just want to go through this. So are you ready for this question, Richard Strange?
Okay, go. I'm sitting down.
Good. Well, we know you're a writer. We know you're an actor, a musician, a curator, and indeed a teacher. Why, in your Wikipedia entry, does it actually have Richard, brackets, or inverted commas, Kid Strange? Are you indeed channeling the inner Hannibal Hayes and Jed Kid Curry? Is this rather like Jed Kid Keegan, former Manchester City player? Or is it like David Kid Jensen? Share with us why the kid.
Yeah, you take your choice there. Come back in time, Alex. This is where the screen goes all wobbly. Come back in time. It's 1974. I'm putting a rock band together that is inspired in equal parts, I suppose, by William Burroughs and the Velvet Underground.
It could have been the Naked Lunch Part 2.
There you go. So I'm sort of conceptualizing this band almost before I've written a single song for it. And I know how I want it to look, how I want it to sound, how I want the dynamic on stage, how I want the graphics to look, and so on. And I'm thinking it's a sort of collision between sci-fi, the Burroughsian take on sci-fi, and kids' comic, caricature, if you like, almost like a cartoon. And I'm thinking these four people are sort of cosmic refugees from some other galaxy. And so I thought we can't have our real names. We've got to be identifying with our characters. So I was Kid Strange from the age of 22 when I started that band.
And of course, not connected with the powers of the Vishanti, the Eye of Agamotto, or indeed anything else created by Steve Ditko and Stan Lee.
No, not at all. But then once that the flag had been shoved in the ground, then, of course, everyone had to have a name. So we got Urban Blitz, Peter Dilemma, and Stoner, and then we were up and running. Now, just to contextualize this, not many people did this. People would call themselves Adam Faith or Marty Wilde or Billy Fury or
Ziggy Stardust.
Ziggy Stardust had happened, but Bowie didn't call himself Ziggy Stardust. That was a character.
He was David Jones.
David Jones called himself David Bowie. But what does Bowie say? It's the name of a knife, you know. So just to contextualize that, this is before people were calling themselves Sid Vicious or Johnny Rotten or Joe Strummer or Polystyrene or you know,
Lena Lovitch.
Lena Lovitch, yeah, exactly. So we were sort of pretty early in there. I had the blue hair. We had a very non-showbiz look. We wore some makeup. So it was definitely post-Bowie and post-Roxy music, but it was pre-punk. And what informed us back then, like T.B. Smith, was not music. It was books, it was films, it was avant-garde theatre, it was contemporary art. And it's rather tragic to say that, you know, because surely, you know, it's supposed to be about girls. But for us...
In the current environment, Richard, we need to be very careful when we start being gender specific on that basis. Well, you know, so looking at non-binary fellow citizens of the planet Earth.
So I can't get into trouble.
Exactly. It's very true. So we talked about, obviously, William Burroughs. In an alternate universe, if you hadn't gone down the line of William Burroughs, what about the other Burroughs? Edgar Rice Burroughs, creator of John Carter, creator of Old Barsoom, creator, of course, of Tarzan of the Apes.
Yeah, well, you haven't seen me in a leotard, a leopard skin leotard. If you had, that would be your answer.
Clearly, exactly. Let's move on to the famous, not infamous, famous tour with Pamela Suman, because obviously Pamela's not with us at present. Hopefully she'll be back with us shortly. What was your first impression of our songstress from New York?
I was smitten. We were doing the tour, Richard Strange Sings the Songs of Lou Reed. And that came about in a funny old way. I got a call from Terry Edwards, the saxophone player, in the middle of summer, about 2019, I think it was. And he said, how do you feel about doing a tour of Richard Strange Sings the Songs of Lou Reed? I said,
it's a perfect day, you said.
What's that?
That's a perfect day.
It's a perfect day. So I said, oh, God, I love it. What a great idea. And Terry said, well, I'm glad you said that because I've started booking the tour. Okay. I said, Terry, we're going to need a band. He said, I've looked into that as well. And then he gave me this the list of a bit like going into a candy store of musicians. Kevin Armstrong, who played with Bowie and Iggy Pop. Dave Imbie on drums, who was playing with Kid Creole. Paul Cutterford, who played with Motley Hoople, Ian Hunter, Cockney Rebel, Terry himself, who played with PJ Harvey and Tindersticks Sticks and Nick Cave, and Flo Sebaver, who was playing keyboards with Earl Slick's band. So, I mean, it was a joy. All I had to do is select 24 songs that I wanted to sing. So we didn't want to go into being a sort of... A Velvet Underground covers band. So we decided that we would just do songs post-Velvets about Lou's characters. So whether it was Stephanie Sayers or Caroline Sayers or Jim or My Friend George or obviously Walk on the Wild Side and Wild Child, where he just name checks these Warholian characters. you know, drug addicts, transvestites, low-life, petty criminals. We found that we had to, a rogues gallery of 24 of these people without even really digging deep, you know. And the songs are so great. The band was so brilliant. We put this tour together. Well, I say we put it together. It was put together. I just had to get on the bus each morning. And we had two fabulous support artists. One was Walker Hornung from New York, and the other was Pam Su Mann. Walker was a sort of singer-songwriter, acoustic, fabulous voice, great charisma, great songs. Pam was something else, though. She was impossible to categorize. You could see where some of the influences were coming from, whether it was, I don't know, Kate Bush or Joe Baez or, you know, or PJ Harvey or whatever. But it was none of that. You know, you couldn't just say, ah, oh, she's like that. You could see where the influences and where the inspiration had got into her and was reflected in her music. But there was a sort of ethereal, otherworldly quality when she was singing it live. There was a, she demanded attention. She demanded a hushed auditorium. And you didn't want to miss anything. You didn't want to miss a single word, a single a letter even. When that tour finished, we hit the lockdown and the pandemic and all that. And to keep myself...
She always said that if she wanted to do a tour in England, it was important she had a dramatic finish. And you can't get much more dramatic than a two-year lockdown,
right,
can you?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have a plague of locusts or something, but... so when that pandemic hit and we were all looking for something to do because we couldn't go out anymore, I started a radio show like so many other people did as a sort of partly a podcast, partly a radio show. And, you know, Pam's music featured in that more or less every other week, even though she hadn't released a lot, because it became almost totemic in my choice of music. You know, it was... everything from, I don't know, early Christian music, through opera, through vaudeville, through jazz, through folk, through protest music, up to techno. And, you know, it was just, what do I like? And that's always been my take on anything I've produced. You can't do it for other people. You can only do it and think, I'd like that if I listen to that. So that was the radio show. And yeah, Pam was an ever-present on that.
Well, there we are, you see.
Radio.
And of course, in terms of the mystical, cosmical union of the way in which these things work, of course, Pamela Su Mann was first put our way by a certain wonderful soul called Tony McDonough, who is a Sheffield Wednesday supporter. And another Sheffield Wednesday supporter, who's also a friend of Tony McDonough, is indeed none other than Martin Ware, who indeed has mixed several of the tracks that have been produced on an album of Different Worlds. See what I did there in terms of knitting together Heaven 17.
World, eh? How small is this world?
Exactly.
And Martin, if we want to be really topical, Martin is responsible in no small way for the world rehabilitation of one Tina Turner.
Indeed. And again, we obviously salute the great Turner, who is now sorting things out in the sky, where, without using the cliche, simply the best. I'm sure she will say, we don't need another hero, and we'll simply go beyond Thunderdome to ensure that ultimately she'll be a private dancer.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm sure we will. Tony McDonough is a very fine gentleman. He lives up in the north of England, and... yeah, he was responsible for doing the press and the PR for the Lou Reed tour.
And of course, brought us together, Richard, if I recall.
Yeah, I think he did.
Just that it could have been a different side of things there. It was a different world. Let's move back to the album, of course, because that's what we're here to really focus on, talk about. We've heard, of course, one of the tracks to launch the show with. We're about to hear A Different World, which I would use the adjective insufferably. Insofar as it's insufferably catchy, it's wonderful from that point of view, and it does sort of fit in terms of that line that I used to often say in the 20th century. around about the 1980s, where, as I said, this century, apart from being the most visually impactful in terms of recording visual images and so on, it was probably the first time in terms of recorded history that if you actually took somebody who was born at the start of the century, say 1900, and plonk them into 1980, they'd probably have actually had several changes, several what's happened, etc. And I think actually that compression of time, because arguably, as we've just talked about, somebody born in 1980 or is around in 1980 or is existent there, suddenly taken from there and plonked into 2023, might also be discombobulated by some of the political shenanigans, some of the technological changes and other aspects within that. Even the spelling of different is D-F-F-R-N-T. So it is quite different with worlds, W-R-L-D. W-R-L-D. So, you know, talk about your tech speak.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're good at it as well, aren't we? We can read that, you know, and think of the letters we're going to say if we're playing Scrabble.
Yeah. But you 26 know. In the alphabet, surely. We need to savour and cherish them, vowels and consonants.
21's enough, man. 21's enough. Get it down. You know, for some people, they only need one letter, I.
This is true. Which neatly brings us, of course, round to, again, something we're going to hear now. Which is, of course, is Pamela's latest offering with Paul X. Murphy. X marks the spot. And it's Chenga Chenga, I Outlier.
You returned me.
there we are. The joys of I Outlier. We're still speaking to the joys of Richard Strange. Of course, we're still speaking to Richard. I mean, it's not as though we're going to say anything to cause offence or anything on that sort of basis. I can actually confirm, given that we're conducting this interview via the magic of Zoom, that Richard is indeed wearing a T-shirt with TV Smith.
Actually, I am. Yeah, basically.
Exactly.
I was looking for the album, but I'll show you the T-shirt. So, yeah, so that
exactly.
was the... As we know, the only thing that keeps us musicians alive now is not the album, it is the T-shirt. So who needs to hear the music when you can see the image?
It's post-modernism in many ways.
Yeah. I don't know if you can see it there, but this is 1978. TV Smith came on to join Doctors of Madness for our very last gig in London, 28th of November, 1978. And we actually did one of the songs, Making Machines, which is on this album. So that's going back to 1978, as are about six of the others. A Different World we wrote because we knew that was going to have to be the title of the album, but we didn't have a song called that. And I was in the bath in France, I remember, on holiday last year, and having this phone call with Tim. We're getting more and more enthusiastic. And whereas there's a long and distinguished tradition of rock and roll stars dying in the bath, like Jim Morrison in France, for example, I didn't pass away, but I did get inspired to write the song A Different World. And then we also revisited another song that we haven't looked at for 30 years or plus called Don't Panic England. And these two songs sort of bookend the record. In a way, they are the obvious singles from the record, but also they throw down the political gauntlet that the rest of the record addresses. The record is unashamedly political, like so much of our music, both solo and in collaboration, is we're very much on the same page politically. So we never have to stop for those discussions and say, oh, hold on, what do you mean?
What would Rishi think about this? What would Rishi say about this?
Yeah.
What would Liz Truss say about this? Should we invite Liz Truss to actually guest vocalise on the record, perhaps? Yeah. Just a thought there.
Yeah.
Richard, perhaps from what you were saying there, maybe your next album title could actually be given the name I Was in the Bath in France.
Ah, that's not bad. Yeah, good. Okay, I'll give you a credit on that song if I write it.
There you are. Fantastic stuff. Okay, how can people actually follow you on the socials, on the range, on the vast range of infinite systems that come through, in the words of the late, great Douglas Adams, in an infinite world of probabilities with the infinite probability drive? How can people access the joys of the double album of A Different World, with two discs encompassing The Big Break, Kings of the Wreckage, Making Machines, Last Human Being in the World. We've heard that. We're about to hear, yes, we've teased enough, A Different World. But you've got Dance of Death, and as you mentioned, of course, Don't Panic England. How can people get hold of the thing itself?
Okay, well... as I say, on all platforms, if you want to buy a signed copy, hard copy, either come to www.doctorsofmadness.com or to www.tvsmith.co.uk, or come to Bandcamp and look up TV Smith or Richard Strange and TV Smith. Or you can stream it on Spotify. And you can see some videos of these songs also on YouTube. So all platforms, you pay your money and you take your choice.
And another couple of, from the sort of slightly bizarre line of questioning, given that Pam's not going to be here to actually sort of say New York, home of the world's finest pickle. I don't know whether it is or it isn't, frankly. I've just stayed with that as a slogan. TV Smith, ever any chance that he would have changed his name to Radio Smith or Newsreel and Film Smith, or was he always TV Smith?
Back in the days where record companies jealously guarded their talent, TV Smith sang on my album, The Phenomenal Rise of Richard Strange, but he was contracted to RCA, I think, and I was contracted to Virgin. So for that one record, he had to become Radio Jones.
There we are. Yeah, nice. And inevitably, we also have to, giving full credits, of course, to the whole thing, given that vocals are provided on tracks 1, 2, 4, and 9 by Lily Budd. Lily Budd?
Lily Budd is my daughter. She's a singer in her own right, a much better singer than I am. She has a band called The Glare, and you can check out The Glare on those same platforms. Go on Spotify. I produced a few records for her, but she's also got a wonderful video called Does It Make You Want to Cry? And that is worth checking out the video of that on YouTube. The Glare, G-L-A-R-E.
You see, proving that we can cross-promote like nobody's business from that point of view. Excellent stuff. We've promoted The Glare. We've promoted Chenga Chenga. It's just epically wonderful. I think we might have talked about this previously, but it is another New York Real Staple question. And normally Pam throws this in, so I'll keep it in place, etc. I'm not going to say in memory of that Pam, because as far as I know, she's still with us, Lord help us, which is great. So what's the wackiest moment you've ever had in the city of New York? Have you ever had a New York City wacky moment?
Oh, my God, I had so many. I was over there in 1980 was the first time I was ever there. I'd done a tour coast to coast, literally with these one-nighters in a van with an English eccentric guy called John Otway. And we went literally from New York across the country, and we did Lawrence, Texas, and Milwaukee, and Madison, Wisconsin, and you name it, Fort Worth and Arkansas and everywhere. And then I got back to New York. This is 1980. And back then I was working with a tape recorder and an acoustic guitar. So you can imagine how much they loved me in Madison, Wisconsin, doing that. But I got back to New York, and I was staying at a house of a friend called Mark Josephson, who had a company, a record. It wasn't a record. Yeah, it was a sort of record servicing business called Rockpool. And they used to put records into clubs all over the country. They had a magazine. And Mark always liked what I did. And he was very welcoming and hospitable. And I slept on his floor in Delancey Street. And then he said, do you have to go back tomorrow? I was flying back to London the next day. And I said, well, I don't have to. Why? He said, I've got this idea about phoning up a guy called Michael Zilker. And Michael Zilker had the coolest record label in the world, not just in New York, called Z Records. They had Was Not Was, they had Suicide, Kid Creole and the Coconuts, Lydia Lunch, The Waitresses, Christina. Michael came down and saw my last solo show. He said, I'd like to make a live record with you. I was working with the tape recorder. I said, Michael, that would be the cheapest record you've ever made, because all you're going to need is a stereo feed, a vocal, and something over the audience, four mics. He said, in that case, I'll be able to give you $150 as an advance as well for it. This was like riches beyond the dreams of avarice, you know. So we set up the gig in Hurrah, a club called Hurrah, up around 50th on the west side, I think it was, somewhere. It was just a brilliant, brilliant night. And I recorded this record. I was supported by Tuxedo Moon that night, a band called Tuxedo Moon. And a fantastic New York pioneer of video making called Ed Steinberg came along to record the show. And this is really early days of music video, 1980. And so I said to Michael, would you mind if Christina was in this? Michael was married to Christina at the time. And he said, no, if she wants to do it, she's her own, agent. So Christina came and did it with me. And she phoned me up, and she was No, I must have seen her because she brought me some photographs of three or four different outfits. I said, anything but the yellow dress, any of those other four, and come at 7:30. Christina, who was known as the late Christina Monet even before she passed away, came at 11:30 wearing the yellow dress, right? And is immortalized in that dress in a song video called International Language.
Absolutely wonderful. So much better than Christa Bo's Lady in Red, because obviously she was in yellow.
This
Anyway,
is the lady in yellow.
there you go.
But I got to work with Christina a lot, and she was fabulous.
Yes.
She just passed away a couple of years ago, but she did a fantastic version of Peggy Lee's "Is That All There Is," and she did an album with Don Was called "Sleep It Off." Fabulous.
Fantastic. Well, Richard, it's been fabulous connecting with your good self as ever, to use a
Oh,
wonderful
I can't wait to
broadcasting
get
cliche.
back there, Alex. I long to come back to New York. It's been way too long. So don't change a thing over there. I
Well,
want
I
to
mean,
be there.
that's where we're basically in the hands of Pamela Suman. I'm sure she'll get the thing sorted. I know she's got good links with respect to the mayor of New York, I think. For the moment, Richard Strange, it's been fabulous connecting with your good self today. Inevitably, I've got to throw those last two questions to you. Have you enjoyed the piece, and will you come back again?
Yes and yes. How's that?
Splendid. This is what we'd like to hear. Richard Strange, musician extraordinaire, creator extraordinaire, and indeed person behind the awesome double album, A Different World, together with, of course, T.B. Smith. There we are, T.B. Smith and Richard Strange. Huge thanks. And yeah, we'll finish off with that particular line. New York, of course, is home to the world's finest what, Richard?
The world's finest pickle, Alex. Didn't you know that?
Been destroyed or damaged. Everybody's speaking in a strange new language. Respect.